Hey, everybody. Welcome to Cambridge Inside Out. My name's Robert Winters, and you're not. And who's that other person with me here tonight?
I thought my name was Robert Winters. Well, since you say it's not, my name is Patrick Barrett, and I'm back.
All right, Mr. Barrett. You're one of my musical heroes, by the way, was also a Barrett, but it was Syd Barrett, one of the originators of Pink Floyd. So anyway, that's neither here nor there, which is probably the name of a song he wrote too. So today is, what is today's date? Today's March 7th, 2023.
Sounds about right.
And we're sort of, flying into springtime, sometimes cold, sometimes not so cold, but, we're here, we're there.
Did we have a winter?
We did have a winter. It was, it's brief, not too snowy, maybe some snow this weekend or something.
It was that day when everything froze for 24 hours.
Yeah. The one where we were we had one brutal cold night where it was like minus 10. And then we had one fearful forecast of a lot of snow, which turned out to be 2 inches and some rain, and it was gone by
My kids' school called it too. My kids are jumping up for joy. I told them at night, and then the next day they were like, "I was like, oh my god, what?
Where's the sledding? Where's the sleds?" Yeah. All right. One of the things, we definitely have a few juicy things to talk about. This being a municipal election year, and for those of us who read between the lines, perhaps more so than others. You can actually see it in the rhetoric that's being spread around from our various elected officials, whatever. But before getting into that, I thought I might just mention three quick things. One was there was a notice of a resolution on the city council agenda on Monday about the death of a man named David Leslie. And I just wanted to speak briefly about that. I knew David pretty well back in the days when he was I first met him, and he was the executive director of the Cambridge Civic Association. And in years later, he was very, very heavily involved with what was then called the Center for Voting and Democracy, which later became Fair Vote, which was really promoting ranked choice voting and proportional representation elsewhere in the country. Really, really solid guy. But I do want to say, when I first met him within the Cambridge Civic Association, he was like a real straight shooter, and this was at a time when many of the people who were on the central players within the Cambridge Civic Association were a mix of old guard, pretty good guys, pretty good women, older women, and real jerks, people who were just trying to be there on the board because they wanted to work behind the scenes and assert political power. And I really, really didn't like, some of them are still activists today, by the way. But David was one of the nicest people. So he passed away just a couple of weeks ago. He was also involved in, I guess it was either CEOC or Food for Free or some of the other nonprofits around the city. So he was a real mover and shaker. The other two are not people who passed away, but two retirements of great significance. One was Sam Korda is retiring or has retired, I'm not sure, from the Cambridge Water Department, who I've known for decades at this point. Even played a nice little joke on him one time where I found out it was a leak in the main water going up to Payson Park in Belmont. And I saw it. I said, well, let me tell him about it in the best possible way. So I made a sign, stuck it in there, and turned it into like a treasure hunt to find the sign. And then they found it, the water department, and repaired the leak, right? And the other retirement of some significance is a fellow whose name, when I first heard it, I thought, is this the Untouchables? His name is Robert Steck. Not to be confused with Robert Stack, who played Elliot Ness on the Untouchables. But Bob Steck was actually, even Dennis Carlone noted that he was just a hell of a great designer of things like playgrounds and whatever. And I heard it once said that, that few people can just work with simple elements like stone and steel and make something really, really beautiful out of it. And he was definitely such a guy. So anyway, I just wanted to mention those couple of facts here. So I don't know. Pardon me for dominating here for a moment, but I'll also mention one funny story about it, which was right around the corner from my house. There's something called the Wilder Playground, a little playground on Lee Street. And when I first moved here, 45 years ago, there was a little basketball court and it was kind of just falling apart. And then they turned the little park into an area where they had a fenced off area with some swing sets and they got rid of all the pavement and such. And I remember when they first put up the posts for the fence, I went, what's going on here? They're putting up a fence here? Why are they fencing in this park that this just got laid out? And I thought, oh, that's terrible. 20 years later, they redesigned the park. And I noticed that the fence had been removed. And what was my first reaction? What are they doing? Removing the fence? So just to sort of show you, when you get used to something, and it becomes the standard, then you resent it being changed, even if it's something you resented being put there in the first place. Anyway, Rob Steck was the person designing the playground. So, all right, I'll shut up now and we'll sort of move on to some other things. So, Mr. Barrett, pay attention now, okay? Okay. One of the things that just to dive right into some of the things at the city council meeting last night, one of the things of no consequence in terms of city council actions, but they had an endorsement of a bill before the state legislature that's currently there. It's actually called HD 3922, which is one having to do with tenant protections and rent stabilization, or words like that are in the title.
Right.
Which is a bill filed by Representative Connolly and others. It involves, basically making some of the things that were made illegal in 1994 with Question 9 and the rent control prohibitions to make them legal in the sense that you would have local options where cities and towns could essentially roll their own forms of either rent controls and other various things. And they kind of lay it all out in this bill about what you could do if you wanted to. So anyway, you certainly must know a thing or two about this.
I have absolutely no opinion whatsoever. This is all news to me. It's interesting. I spoke with our state rep a little while ago, and he had told me that he is not a rent control advocate, that he believes that it's not a good solution to the housing issue that we're facing, which is, doesn't surprise me that we see here, a second endorsement of this policy. And I've seen him on social media sort of blasting it out. It's one of these things that has been reduced to a political decision. And we have a long history of rent control. We know what it does. We know who it actually serves and who it doesn't. We also have very good examples in recent adoptions of rent control in both Oregon, the expansion in California. We see how it's affected New York City, and there's other municipalities are sort of playing with it. And the result is always going to be the same. You're going to start seeing less permitting. You're going to see reduction in housing stock. And once again, you're going to see the divestment of capital in the housing market. And I think, to my mind, it's that, the expression is, it's insanity to, keep doing the same thing over again and expecting a different result. And that's where we are, all over again. And it's all precipitated, which I find ironic, by the same people. I have to list Mike Connolly as among them, who have blocked almost every housing development in the city, who cheered on blocking massive rezoning attempts at places like Central Square. And now they're saying, essentially, we've tried nothing and we're all out of ideas.
One aspect of this, the political rhetoric. Now, again, I have not witnessed what people are saying up at the State House. I've sort of been teaching myself lately to know what things to avoid if it's just going to aggravate me, because I don't feel like being aggravated as much. But what I do, I get a kick out of the contradictory rhetoric. Okay, so this is, you know, whether this is a good idea or a bad idea is, you know, for people to debate, I'm sure. But some of the city councilors last night, they were saying, oh, I think Council McGovern for saying, well, this isn't the old rent control that we remember from, you know, old Cambridge style rent control. I certainly wouldn't support that.
Right.
And then at least two other councilors jive in, you know, they chime in and they say, well, this isn't really like what you're thinking about. You know, this isn't your daddy's rent control. This is something entirely different. This is really about local control. Right. Yeah.
So, you know, that was the trick in the referendum in 94, making it a state issue. But if, you know, it's like we talk about housing in general, and it's always housing is a regional issue, housing, and we need a regional strategy. But when it comes to control, we need local control. And you think about in terms of a strategy, 344 some odd municipalities in the Commonwealth, you pass something like this, and you're going to have 344 rent control battlegrounds on Board of Aldermen and city councils. This is only a political decision being made. And right now, I mean, it's hard as a person who watches this so carefully to see it in slow motion, but a lot of what the council is currently advocating for and currently doing revolves around this notion of a political decision, not a economic decision, not a decision that's really for the well-being of the state or the Commonwealth or even the city of Cambridge. You know, when you know, the same people, and Mark's an advocate for housing. He's always been an advocate for housing. Mark knows better. If we pass a rent control referendum and you give local control, what do you think every 2 years we're going to be talking about?
Well, I think that's exactly right. I came to Cambridge in 1978. I think I registered to vote I waited a couple of years before I registered. And I can tell you right through all the way through, not only to 1994, but actually beyond, how you stood on rent control was the number one litmus test for every single person in the political arena. And everything else was secondary. So, you know, you had to first make sure you had to agree with the party line on either side of that issue. And then you had a little bit of flexibility to be your own person as a candidate. But really, it was all about rent control. And so, you know, if you want to really move down that road again, well, history, I guarantee you, will repeat itself. But from a rhetorical point of view, here's the one of the great things that I just get delight from, right? Is to have elected officials saying, well, don't you know this is about local control? Yet, when they voted, I believe it was actually at the previous meeting, to endorse yet another thing at the State House, which was something called, it was an act having to do, actually it's called HD 3252, an act promoting yes in my backyard, right? Now, what's the cornerstone of the principle in the yes in my backyard is actually telling people within individual cities and towns that they cannot stop certain things, right? In other words, we don't want local control on that issue. Yet in this other bill here, don't you know, this is all about the importance of local control.
Right? Yeah, well, I've always complained a little bit about the intellectual inconsistency amongst our councilors. What's good for thee is not for me, sort of mentality. But I mean, if you truly believe that we are in a housing crisis, and you truly believe that we need to add more housing stock, then you can't support rent control in any of its forms. Saying it's not your mother's rent control or your father's rent control doesn't make it so. And in fact, because of that local control measure, you have no idea what it is. It could absolutely be your mother's or your father's rent control. We have yet to decide. And it will only take five councilors to decide that we're going back to rent control boards. We're going back to the draconian methods. And I'm my only hope right now, and I told you this before, I said, Mike Connolly is so, you know, sort of a dog with a bone with this, that, you know, maybe Massachusetts is the state that breaks it. Maybe we're the ones that go so far that we wind up becoming a regulatory takings case that the Supreme Court actually takes up, where they denied in 2012. We thought we were going to get close to it. And with the current makeup of the Supremes, you know, Mike could be the guy who makes rent control legal.
I think you might have a point. Actually, it would be interesting if we ever saw the day when our city council has actually read the legislation that they endorse. Because if they actually read this particular one, they would actually see that in it, it actually contains a provision to allow the local government to basically say who qualifies for the rentals in the controlled units. In other words, means testing. Everybody who was through the rent control wars on either side back in, you know, leading up to 1994 knew that when you had a council like Billy Walsh, who was the most anti-rent control guy around, when he says, I think there ought to be a means test, everybody who really knew what that was about knew that he was doing that because he wanted a means test, because the moment he did that, the whole thing would have been challengeable, taken to the Supreme Court, and that was actually a very effective way to end rent control completely.
Well, under Chapter 40P, we already have a version of rent control. The state or municipality just has to pay for the difference. So, you know, that's perfectly valid way. I mean, to my mind, this is the state and the city. This is the city of Cambridge and other, you know, really Boston being pushing this, saying that, you know, we want your property. We know we can't just take it. So we're going to take a little bit of it and chip away at that value and chip away at that, the equity in your home and, you know, give it back to somebody else. And as far as I'm concerned, it's a regulatory taking and it's only a matter of time, but would I entrust our city council to enact a policy and that's going to actually, you know, alleviate pressure on tenants, but also spur housing construction? I mean, not unless their plan is really to just allow for the AHO to be the only way housing is produced. And there's another issue, and I'm sorry to keep yakking about it, but we've never existed in a moment where rent control and inclusionary zoning have existed in the same universe. So how does that work? So now you're telling me as a housing developer, I'm going to build housing and you're going to take 20% of that housing and give it to the Affordable Housing Trust. And you're also going to cap the rents on the units that are market rate.
Well, it's interesting you should mention that because there's actually like at least three items I was going to mention in this regard. One was in this act promoting Yes in My Backyard actually has a clause that specifically says that nothing in this legislation here, everything, this legislation should ensure that inclusionary zoning does not constrain housing production. You know, so in other words, they were explicitly acknowledging the fact that policies, local policies like inclusionary zoning, might well have the effect of actually stifling housing growth. So, you know, so on the one hand, we love inclusionary zoning because we really believe in affordable housing. But on the other hand, we're also at the same time acknowledging that maybe actually inclusionary zoning laws might actually stifle housing.
Well, the biggest advocates I've seen for rent control are also the same people who are against any kind of development. And I have to think that like they're not really housing advocates or even tenant advocates. They're just sort of housing nihilists. They simply, you know, they believe in nothing, Lebowski. But, you know, they just
want to go get a white Russian right now.
You know, yeah. it just, again, back to the intellectual inconsistency, I think they think in their hearts, they understand that if they pass something like this, they're less banging outside their windows.
Right. Well, you know, as I've often pointed out, you know, either in online forums and elsewhere that, it's one thing to sort of believe in controlling rents. As a landlord, I control the rents in my building. You know, if we'd stayed under rent control, my rent levels over the 20 some odd years would actually have been lower than what the city would have allowed. You know, so it's not like people like myself believe in just, you know, jack and rents skyward. You know, that's sort of not the issue for many of us. But one of the things that I do like to point out to people is that, and I learned this when I was a candidate years ago, was that I was thinking of everything in terms of modifying the way in which the rents were regulated. And this wonderful woman just came up to me. She actually put her hands on me. She says, "Don't you understand? This isn't about the money. It's about the control, right? Is that it's really about getting your local elected officials to have a lot more say so in how you operate your property, who you can rent to, who you can choose to no longer rent to, AKA just cause for evictions, or how, you know, who you must, whether you should actually, like, for example, in inclusionary zoning, whether in fact you actually have to go to the city and have the city tell you who's going to live there.
To my mind, this is just yet another invitation by the council, by the city, to small property owners and to small operators who are not big corporations and big REITs to get out of Cambridge. Sell your property. I will tell you right now, if I was a betting man, rent control is coming back. And when it comes to the local level, you have 2 years between this council and the next before it's a rent control council. And what you're going to be facing is not a 10% cap on rents, but probably like a 2% cap on rents. And, you know, it's going to be a much more hostile environment. And for anybody who's interested in, you know, this YIMBY movement, these YIMBY people, ABC, whatever, you know, if you're in that group and you're for rent control, you have no idea what you're talking about. You should do is take off your ABC shirt, put on a Cambridge Residents Alliance shirt, and just walk over to that camp.
Which is especially funny since the ABC group was originally created as sort of the anti-Cambridge Residents Alliance. You know,
and in the end, it all just converges.
I think it's like, I remember back in the 1980s getting arguments with my new age friends about the harmonic convergence. So, you know, I guess this is the harmonic convergence where the control freaks on all sides of the issue come together and break bread. Yeah. By the way, there was one other thing, you know, not to, you know, obsess on the whole housing issue, but there was another item that was on a city council agenda having to do with, and I'll probably say this incorrectly, but it had to do with municipally funded housing vouchers, which apparently, and again, I don't know for sure, but City of Somerville apparently is either experimenting with this or doing something in this regard, and maybe City of Boston as well. And I don't know too much about it, but it seems to me like taking taxpayer money and just handing it out that way is not something necessarily a city can do. To individuals, but I believe it could be done through the magic of the ARPA funds in the short term. Now, I don't know if you heard anything about this.
That's exactly what we did in Cambridge with the $500 stipend. So I think it was always curious to my mind when Cambridge decided to give $22 million away in this pilot program, what was going to be the end game. You know, once this ends, which is going to be, I believe, in a few months, right around election time, you know, how would it even be possible for the city to continue it on if we had wanted to? You know, is it something that taxpayers would vote on, or something that taxpayers would, as a taxpayer, you're going to say, yes, we should give away money to whoever wants it. I don't know. I think it's an odd result.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's one of those things where you probably have to get either the city solicitor or some higher authority to chime in on it with expertise about what is and is not legal under the anti-aid amendment. But,
is the city council trying to do things like this, and the city solicitor saying, no, you can't give money away. You know, there's a mural in Central Square you may have heard about that was allegedly paid for with city money. And, you know, talking to the city now, they've changed. I mean, they say, we don't do that. So, like, I do believe that there's a real prohibition coming from City Hall on private expenditures.
So maybe the next piece of legislation at the State House, riding herd on or just in right behind some of these other propositions would be some kind of enabling legislation to permit cities and towns to carry out something like this, like with municipally funded vouchers? Because I don't know that it's, I don't personally believe they can do that now, right? I mean, and ARPA, unless another pandemic's coming down the pike with the next round of ARPA funds, which, you know, I certainly, you know, I guess we don't want to turn down money, but I certainly don't want another pandemic.
I wouldn't count it based on what I'm seeing from the Fed. There are no more funds to give, Robert.
Right. Actually, I even heard that now even the free COVID vaccination sites are all pretty much going away now too. So that, I guess if you got health insurance, you still get it as part of your health insurance, I suppose. But I mean, things are winding down. So the notion of this period of tremendous free money, which was, you know, for the politically oriented, I guess this has been a real wonderful thing, because they could, you know, there's nothing a political person wants more than the capacity to hand out candy. You can literally buy votes, you know. And when Mayor Siddiqui announced as, you know, part of the initial wave of the ARPA money, that they were going to basically hand out a rather significant sum of money to a lot of people. And again, I'm not questioning whether people are in need or not, but a question is the sort of the political strategy, if pardon my cynicism, of basically passing around money, you know, and knowing full well that you will be rewarded when it comes time for elections. And you are correct, I believe, saying that that program, you know, 18-month period will be ending right prior to the municipal elections this year. So I imagine some proposal for a continuation of same will probably be part of the political calculus later this year.
Well, going back to political decisions, like, you know, it's quite possible that even knowing that the city can't do it, that someone could say, well, this is my proposal to continue this program, and the mean, terrible city manager is blocking this from happening because, you know, he's just a mean, bad person. And you know what? We don't need a city manager. We don't need a city manager at all. We need a strong mayor or a strong council.
Well, we're our first half hour is winding down here. I think that's probably a really excellent place to actually begin the next half hour. Talk a little bit about that manager versus mayor question, and then some. Okay, so anyway, we'll be back in a few minutes on Cambridge Inside Out.